This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Mark Reardon.
All the spending, all the regulating, turning off the oil and gas spigots, all these things, the chickens have come home to roost.
The Mark Reardon Show.
You can lead a man to the presidency, but you can't make him think.
The ill-begotten gains of Putin's kleptocracy.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
You know, I opened my show with that cut from Ronald Reagan for many, many years. I'm not even so sure that it's not in one of the opens that we have right now, but it says a lot and it means a lot right now. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As we get started here today, we've had another nomination. This one might make Sue Thomas relatively happy. It's RFK Jr. to head the Department of Health and Human Services.
Fantastic.
I say fantastic, too. And, you know, there were some friend and I were just kind of talking about this, that there were I even heard some people buzz in the last couple of days. Well, he's not going to get that. He's going to get some other role that's more specific. But he was nominated to HHS. Now, in the time that I've been gone here for a couple of days, heads have exploded even more in Washington and beyond. And I'm okay with it. And I'm going to explain that here this afternoon. You know, I was at home yesterday and I heard about the Matt Gaetz thing and my phone started blowing up and then I started blowing up other people's phones and I saw the reaction on the X, formerly Twitter, and people were just going nuts. Now, my knee-jerk reaction to this was I didn't like it very much. Because I don't like Matt Gaetz. I just don't like
him.
Well, I have a theory, too. But I don't like Matt Gaetz, and a lot of people don't like Matt Gaetz. And here, I guess the question would be, can he get confirmed even in this position? Now, here's what I would say. A couple of things. Because I started thinking about this. And I'm not making my judgment about Matt Gaetz being, you know, appropriate for this position necessarily based on his qualifications. I don't like his personality. He's a little bit of a troublemaker. If he's not in the House, that actually helps Mike Johnson probably because he's not going to be an obstructionist. But then I also thought to myself, you know, you think about the cabinet that we have right now, and let's think about the Attorney General Merrick Garland, who must be a great grandpa because he seems like a nice, feeble old man. He was almost on the Supreme Court, but good God, I don't care if it's Matt Gaetz or someone else, you're getting an upgrade. What qualifications, because I think Matt Gaetz actually does have qualifications, people might not like them, but what qualifications did Mayor Pete have before he ran transportation? He was a mayor and he was gay. There you go. There's your qualifications. So I'm going to sit back and say, and let me go back to the Reagan bite, because this is an administration and this is a guy who just got elected and a team around him who are going to get something done right now. And if I go back to the 1980s, my first presidential election, 1984, I was part of the Reagan Revolution. I philosophically believed then the same way I believe now. Let me see if Mr. Reagan can put it into proper phrasing.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
But here's the problem. In 1988, government expanded. In 1992, government expanded. In 1996, government expanded. You get the pattern? Government always expands. It doesn't matter if there's a Republican in office or a Democrat in office. It always grows. It's grown beyond any of the founders' potential recognition. So it's time to do something about it, and it's time to dismantle some of this. You know, people talk about the Department of Education. That has the left freaked out. Raise your hand if the federal government and the Department of Education has done one damn thing to help you or your children advance their learning. Mm-mm. They haven't. They haven't done anything. So while it sounds radical in some of these things, you know, we can talk about the big boogeyman, Project 2025. Some of these things are radical because it's time to get radical. It really is time to do something.
Agreed.
They have 2 years right now, really. I mean, if we're being honest, you got 2 years, which is maybe why they're talking about the recess appointments, because if you do a recess appointment and you get Matt Gaetz in there and there's no confirmation, my understanding is it would be good to the next Congress. The next Congress might flip to Democrats. So I do think some of this needs to be handled or managed appropriately, just because you want the electorate to know that you're getting things done, and it's not just for retribution. But your theory was what, Sue?
The Matt Gaetz theory to me is that just like Trump, who is, you know, under fire constantly, sometimes literally, and you have to have whatever that personality is that lets you get it. I think he thinks that Matt Gaetz will forge ahead no matter what.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe there's something to that, because I'm not going to sit here and question all these things, especially based on the opportunity to actually get things done. Look, the House is now set. You got 218 to 209. You got a good Senate majority, even one that doesn't necessarily include, you know, must have votes from Lisa Murkowski and, you know, Susan Collins, who are temporary Republicans sometime. So there's a lot of opportunity here to really get things done. And there are priorities like revamping justice. Here's what and by the way, I like there's a lot of what I like so far. John Barrasso is one of them. He's going to be the whip. John Thune. Look, I know some people want to Cornyn, Tim Scott, John Thune. I'd love to know how the votes came down. We know that Senator Hawley supported Cornyn. Fred, did you hear? Did Schmidt say who he supported?
I haven't seen a release saying
so I'm not
that,
sure on that. And by the way, there's some news on Schmidt, I think, a little bit, not news necessarily, but there seems to be an indication that he would move to the Senate Judiciary Committee as well. That's a big appointment. Senator Hawley's on that. So that would be awesome for Eric if he gets there. But here is a couple of bites here. Here's Kash Patel, who was in the previous administration, talking about justice.
One of my biggest personal recommendations is you shut down the FBI headquarters building and open it up the next day as the Museum of the Deep State. And you send those 7,000 agents in the headquarters building downrange to chase down rapists, to chase down murderers, to chase down drug traffickers, and let the cops be cops on the streets across America. You keep a small contingent in Washington, D.C. That's step one. You get rid of half of the legion of lawyers and special counsels that exist within the FBI to do one thing, to corrupt and obstruct government oversight from constitutionally applicable committees in Congress. And another aspect of it real quick is one of the biggest institutions in the FBI that has been troubled and politicized and weaponized has been their intel component. We have an intel agency. I don't need it to be redone within the walls of the FBI. We've shown when we've given them that power, what they do to it.
Yeah, so maybe there are changes, dramatic changes that are necessary. Let's revamp the Justice Department. Let's reduce the size and scope of all of our government bureaucracy. Let's cut that red tape. Let's get rid of the deep state. There's other encouraging news. You got Rand Paul, who is going to be the chair of the Homeland Security Committee. He is going to go after this COVID cover-up and try to get some answers from Dr. Fauci and others. So shattering the status quo was something that we all talked about in 2016, that the country gave, you know, Washington the swamp a middle finger. And that middle finger was there, but I think there was less support at that time. It was more the Trump faithful, and there was a little caution, I'll admit.
Yep.
You know, you want to go with what's been done before. But look at what he's doing with this cabinet right now.
Yep.
Is anyone over 60 years old?
I don't think
not very many.
So. Well,
right?
Maybe.
I'm not talking about Senator Thune. Yeah. RFK Jr. probably would be.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's talk about everyone else. Tulsi and Elon and Vivek. These are all young people. I have some really interesting New York Times I don't even know if they're readers, but it was a focus group from young people that I'll share here in a second because I thought that was very interesting. But here's John Barrasso. John Barrasso is going to play a very, very important role in all this in trying to shepherd legislation in the Senate. So even though John Thune is the majority leader, the whip plays a very important role. This is a role that Roy Blunt had when he was in the House. He was the whip. He was probably positioned at one point to be the House Speaker, and he went to the Senate.
What does a whip do? A whip just
whips
makes up the
sure
votes?
That those count. Well, make sure that the vote counts are there, that the president, that the majority has the vote so they don't take things to the floor. They have to build coalitions. Sometimes you need Democrats to vote for legislation as well. But here's Barrasso.
Will he get confirmed? Well, he'll certainly have a fair hearing and people will have a chance to vote. What I want to do,
and Matt Gaetz,
specifically with this, and you would expect the president to make bold decisions and appointments. Look what happened to the president over the last 4 years. We have seen the Justice Department in this administration weaponized, politicized. They've dragged President Trump through the court repeatedly. You know, nobody should be above the law, but nobody should be the target of the law. And what we've had is President Trump being the target of the law. So when he talks about draining the swamp, it's not just all of Washington, specific the Department of Justice. So this is no surprise that the president has made a bold announcement and decision there. But everyone that he has nominated so far, better than the people that are in there right now.
Well, so that I'm going to say there's something to that right now. So John Bolton, yep, who is in the old guard of the neocon, says Gaetz must be the worst nomination for a cabinet position in American history. It's easy to say stuff like that. To which Joe Warmington, one of our friends up in Canada, said, not nearly as bad as those who made up Russiagate, used lawfare to prosecute a president, jail his team while protecting another's son by signing a false claim. There would be no Matt Gaetz if that didn't happen. So maybe he is the guy to shatter the status quo. I don't know the answer to that, but we're going to find out, aren't we? I want to get things done. And yep, I think that this is a guy who wants to get things done in a team around him. And there is no time to waste. So let's get to it. Let's do big, bold things. And let's see if we can make changes and help the American people. Isn't that weird how we'd focus on the American people? Now, a couple of things. Let me see if I can get to this stuff from the New York Times, because I did find this interesting when I was going through it this morning. A bunch of younger voters who basically made some statements I think that a lot of us couldn't relate to here listening to this show. But these are people in, you know, their 20s, all quoted by the New York Times. I can't believe it, but I did end up voting for Donald Trump, said Abigail, 23-year-old Virginian, who backed Mr. Biden the last time. She felt Mr. Trump was a strong leader, liked his choice of J.D. Vance, felt Democrats made assumptions based on gender. Says, I made that decision when I saw J.D. Vance's interview with the New York Times. He is the future of the Republican Party. I'm more voting for Vance than I am for Trump. That's interesting, yeah, right? George, 21, Georgia, white, didn't vote in 2020. I voted for Donald Trump. Like Abigail, I was really impressed with J.D. Vance, especially during the VP debate. McClain, 25, white, legal field, wrote in Romney in 2020. Whoa, this is a guy who wrote in Romney in 2020.
Wow.
And says, I was so impressed by J.D. Vance, the way he carried himself and how normal he appeared. Yep. I thought he was weird, right? I think I became radicalized on the men and women sports issue. The ad said that Kamala represents they, them. Trump represents you. That was so compelling. See, that thing in particular, and you're seeing a lot of pushback on the they, them. There's even, you know, some of the stuff I got to vet still. But it looks like even AOC has taken off her identifiers.
Which, what? Seriously?
Well, somebody posted a side-by-side, and I don't know if that was accidental or what. Lillian, 27, white, from Virginia, digital advertising. She voted for Trump in 2020. She says, I think that Donald Trump or J.D. Vance should go on Joe Rogan regularly. That would be a cool way to check in and give a progress update. By the way, that's a great idea. That is a great idea. Have a conversation, Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, with Joe Rogan and others that's a little bit more lengthy than just, you know, the 15-minute conversation. Laura, 20, white, legal intern, didn't vote in 2020. I did consider voting for Trump when I saw Vance. I got to switch pages here. I might not have that one because I cut it off. Sorry about that. Lillian, I voted for Trump and made that decision the same day the mainstream media was having a meltdown after the Madison Square Garden rally. I also saw an ad for Democrats about abortion misinformation. That really made me upset. And this was rather, you know, consistent. Here's another one that said, I saw how the media, this is Abigail, said, I saw how the media has become so corrupted in their cause against Trump. There was that Trump clip of him saying, put Cheney in front of a bunch of shooters, but he wasn't really implying Cheney should be shot. I cannot vote for an establishment that thinks it's okay to lie to us. I hope that in 4 years, the mainstream media wakes up and sees everybody is fine and stops calling Republicans fascists. This, ladies and gentlemen, gives me big, big, big hope for the future, because if you have younger people in this country dialed into the media malfeasance that's going on out there, well, they're a lot further along than a lot of older Americans. We know that for certain. We got Jerry Baker from The Wall Street Journal and a whole lot more here this afternoon coming up next.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, breaking news here. The Attorney General of Florida, Ashley Moody, is her name, has now filed lawsuit against FEMA and some of its former officials for ordering workers to ignore storm victims who support President-elect Trump. What a disgusting story. And, you know, it's another one of those, if you really kind of weigh the media attention on that one, not getting a lot of attention in the old legacy media, right? Because Trump was involved, which I think is interesting. But that one needs to be thoroughly investigated to see how often it happened in North Carolina as well. Our friend Jerry Baker, editor-at-large for The Wall Street Journal, back with us on this Thursday afternoon. Jerry, how are you? Welcome back. Are you there? There you are.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
Sorry, Jerry. Yeah. I got confused. I did not hear you. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, thanks. Sorry, I was hearing a lot of like a Tower of Babel going on. But yeah, thank you for having me.
Is it okay now? Is the line clear now?
Yeah, it's awesome. Great. Thank you.
All right, let's talk. I started the show this afternoon. I was not here yesterday, so I started talking about Matt Gaetz. I know the Journal editorialized about Matt Gaetz. My position on this right now is, hey, I think a lot of people would be an upgrade from what we have right now. I understand this one is not very popular. I don't like the guy personally myself, but thoughts on that and then the other cabinet appointments that keep coming in here, Jerry?
Yeah, look, you're right, of course, and I think the idea that there is some objective standard for Attorney General for any of these roles, actually, and that there's some kind of objective level of experience or background or whatever that you have to do, I think is wrong. I think, you know, people can be, and you know, for heaven's sake, we've had, you know, people in that role. I mean, you know, Bobby Kennedy, funnily enough, talking of, we've got more news on the Kennedy family, obviously, right now. But, you know, Bobby Kennedy was appointed by his brother to Attorney General with very little experience or background. You know, arguably didn't do a very good job. But, you know, so I want to be careful about saying, wow, there is some sort of objective minimal standard and Matt Gaetz doesn't reach that. I think the larger question is, there are two questions. One, what is Trump doing by nominating him? And I think, you know, on the one hand, you can absolutely say, you know, I mean, if I were Donald Trump and I faced the kind of scrutiny, to put it mildly, from the Justice Department that I've received in the course of the last 8 years, both as a result of special counsels when he was president and subsequently under prosecutors when he was when he ceased to be president, you know, I'd be minded to send someone in there who might blow the place up and, you know, take a pretty aggressive approach to the kind of reforms that are needed. The question, I just think, is whether or not there will be, you know, there are going to be hearings, presumably, if he gets that far. And there are question marks about his ethics. We're going to have to see what happens with this ethics report that's kind of hanging around in the House, and whether or not, I assume that will be made available to the Senate when they consider the nomination, and there may be some things in there from everything we're hearing that paint a pretty unsavory picture. So, yeah, I don't want to rush to judgment on this, and we should see. And as you say, there have certainly been candidates and indeed office holders in that job that don't exactly meet the highest standards of behavior. But I think he does face, you know, I think this the particular questions about his ethics are going to be a challenge, I think, for a lot of those senators.
So, and you know, kind of on the same page here, on the John Thune victory yesterday, obviously there were a lot of folks, including our own Senator Hawley. I'm not exactly sure on Senator Schmidt or where he voted on this, but Hawley declared that he was a Cornyn guy. And there were fans of Rick Scott who didn't, I don't think, make it to the second round. But he's more of a McConnell. Thune's more of a McConnell ally. A lot of MAGA doesn't like McConnell, but you know, he's certainly declared his intention to follow and prioritize what President Trump wants right now, Jerry.
Yeah, he has. And I think that's right. Look, I do, again, Donald Trump's won the election. It's a very important and very impressive win. It's an historic win. It's not a landslide, despite some of the things that are being said, but it's a significant win. It's the first time a Republican has won the popular vote from, you know, not being an incumbent, from sort of outside the White House since Ronald Reagan in 1980. And, you know, they've won the Senate, and the Republicans have won the Senate, have won the House. So it's a, you know, it's a clear majority. It's a clear mandate for what Donald Trump wants to do. But you know, I'm a proud American citizen. I'm an immigrant to this country. One of the great things about this country is it has divided government. It has separation of powers. And the Senate, in fact, you know, under Article 1 of the Constitution, the Congress is the primary, they're not co-equal branches of government. The Congress has its own role to play in the government of the country, arguably a more important one than the executive. And the Senate, you know, as the upper chamber in that body, has got very important constitutional roles to fulfill. But it's not just the Senate's role simply to rubber stamp everything the president wants to do. And unfortunately, you know, I grew up in England where we have a parliamentary system where that is basically what parliament does. The executive tells parliament what to vote through and parliament votes it through. We have a much better system of government in this country where, you know, again, where there is a proper balance and checks and balances in the system. And I think it's good. It's good that John Thune is broadly supportive of the president's agenda. But that doesn't mean John Thune and the Senate should simply surrender and just agree to everything that Donald Trump wants to do. They have their own powers and their own rights, and they should exercise them.
And I think they probably will exercise them. It'll be interesting to see moving forward. But one of the things I think that you'd have to agree on right now, and I know a lot of people on the left are panicking about this, if the goal was to shatter the status quo, they're not wasting 1 minute in doing that. You kind of alluded to Kennedy. RFK was named HHS secretary this afternoon. That's going to explode some heads. But all of these people, even if you're looking at non-cabinet appointments, some different roles in the Senate, Rand Paul chairing the Homeland Security Committee, kind of going after some of this COVID stuff, they're going to shake a lot of things up here in the next 2 years.
Oh, sure. And look, I think, and again, I think that's what Donald Trump was elected for. Look, we've seen, you and I, Mark, have discussed this many times over the last few years. You know, we've seen this takeover of our institutions by this cultural progressive elite pushing forward an agenda, whether it's on the green energy stuff, whether it's on open borders and globalism and this terrible, corrosive, woke, progressive culture. This has taken unelected, for the most part, taken over these major institutions of our society and our culture. And I believe Donald Trump was elected to roll that back. I think a lot of people, you know, have had enough of that and feel it's gone way too far. And the president, and that means, by the way, because, you know, there is such entrenched power in so many, you know, in the permanent government, for example, if you want to call it the deep state, whatever you want to call it, people who are committed to these ideas, you know, just take a look at the Pentagon. I mean, the Pentagon, you know, whatever you think of, you know, the merits of Pete Hegseth for that role, his criticism of the Pentagon is exactly right.
Yeah, it is.
Because the Pentagon has become captive to these woke progressive ideas, which are undermining the fighting capability of the U.S. military. And I think, yeah, so I think it is right. So Donald Trump, he has been elected to come in and, you know, coin that old phrase, drain the swamp, blow things up, sort of try and disrupt this extraordinary stranglehold that these progressive cultures had on all aspects of our government for the last decade or so.
So what is your observation, Matt? You know, it's been interesting to me here the last week. You see some people, maybe even Eric Adams in New York City, although he might be worried about his own legal future, accepting the fact that Trump's going to be in office and maybe even show some willingness to understand why the voters did this. Then we have a mayor here in St. Louis, Tashara Jones, and others like Brandon Johnson in Chicago, defiant. All they keep repeating is the same catch catchwords, Jerry. You know, misogyny, white supremacy, racism, bigotry, xenophobia, blah, blah, blah. So not really taking the message to heart that the American people sent. What do you make of that? Because I do think that Democrats, and maybe they don't realize this, a lot of them do, are going to have to dig down deep and try to understand what their voters did in this election, even people that did not like Donald Trump.
Yeah, look, there's a little bit of soul searching going on. You've heard from some people, we've heard, from across the spectrum, actually. You're right about Eric Adams. I think Eric Adams probably has his own motivations. He's angling for a pardon from Donald Trump, and maybe he'll get one. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, the day after the election, said, you know, we've abandoned the working class, and when we abandon the working class, the working class abandons us. You've seen a little bit of soul searching from some of these people who've suffered setbacks in some of these cities. But I think what I'm not sure about, the reason I'm a little bit skeptical of that will really take hold is, you know, once we're back, Trump is making all of these, many of these, highly kind of, shall we say, sort of flamboyant picks here, from, you know, Pete Hegseth to Matt Gaetz to Tulsi Gabbard to RFK Jr. We're going to be pretty quickly back, I suspect, with a lot of these Democrats into resistance mode. They're going to sort of once again fall back on the claim that, you know, Donald Trump's a fascist and that he's trying to destroy the country and that he's maybe a Russian asset and all this kind of stuff. And I think that probably in the end will remain the dominant sort of theme in the Democratic Party over the next few years. So, and that will probably preclude the possibility that the Democrats will really undergo the kind of reckoning, the kind of soul searching, the kind of, you know, internal, the kind of change, frankly, that the party needs to do. Yeah. So I'm a little skeptical how far that sort of reflection.
Yeah,
they'll
probably circle back. I agree with you on that. But look, if they don't, you know, just from a pure entertainment viewpoint, Jerry, if this Matt Gaetz appointment doesn't go to Senate confirmation, I'm going to be very disappointed because I'm already popping the popcorn for that one.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The Wall Street Journal, my paper's just reported a very interesting piece citing, you know, large numbers of senators saying it hasn't got a chance.
Right.
In fact, the report says anywhere between 5 and 30 Republican senators may oppose his nomination. That's kind of where I think that's probably where it's going to come out. And if that's the case, you know, does Trump then want to push it all the way to hearings? They say, again, this report says, talking to people on the Judiciary Committee, may not even make it out of the Judiciary Committee, let alone to the full Senate. So, look, that's premature, and we should give the man a chance, let him make his case. But as it stands, I think it looks like a long shot.
Yeah, look, that's interesting. I'll look at the new reporting. Jerry Baker, always great to have you on. You have a great weekend. Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you.
Saying what you're thinking, Mark Reardon.
All right, we're getting closer to Friday here, and that means a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be here, Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff for Mayor Slay back in the day, and Gene Evans all on the panel. We got a regular Friday stuff, Paul Hall with entertainment, Mr. Cusimano with some sports. Michelle Tafoya is going to join us tomorrow night, and my friend Gary Stromberg, who has been with us before. Gary was behind a really cool Rolling Stones podcast that we featured last year. He's got another one about the Rumble in the Jungle, that he was the producer for all the music for that in, what was it, 1974. So really fascinating stories. There's a great story. I had Gary share this the last time he was on the air of what happened on this plane that was taking off, and James Brown, like, almost pulled a knife on somebody. It's a crazy story. It's like my favorite Gary Stromberg story.
Oh,
and Gary
gosh.
Was a big, big, PR agent in Hollywood in the late 60s, early 70s, represented the Stones and big, big acts. So he's a player, and he's going to be with us tomorrow night. Right now, a player in the world of politics, Bruce Abramson, back with us. He is currently the admissions director at the New College of Florida. He's a fellow at the Coalition for America, has written about some great things as well, like American Spirit or Great Awakening. Bruce, how are you? And welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Great. Thank you very much, Mark. Always a pleasure to be with you.
First reaction here. We're going to talk about some of the broader themes in a second, but reaction to the cabinet appointments. There's no doubt that President Trump is trying to shake up Washington even more than he did in 2016, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he's really coming in with a bang this time. I'm thrilled with some of them. I'm somewhat less thrilled with others.
Right.
But, you know, as I keep reminding people on Twitter, you can't win an election with a faction. the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, a coalition of factions. And I'm really thrilled with the coalition that President Trump brought together this time. I'm very pleased that he brought in former Democrats like RFK and Tulsi Gabbard. And I've been saying for years, what I really want is a coalition that isolates the woke. And the truth is that the factions other than mine are going to win some. And so I will learn to deal with that.
You know, Bruce,
and I think everybody really needs to keep that in mind.
You wrote, and you know, your feelings. We've talked about this before. There's a lot of folks that are regular guests that are fully on the, if you want to call it, the Trump train right now. That we're not on that train. Certainly in the aftermath of 2020, and you even said in your more recent column, by early 21, my focus was entirely on restoring the public. Republic, rather. That, in my opinion, required someone capable of structural reform, the sort of nitty-gritty control of personnel and details that Trump had lacked in office. I believe that there were far more capable of that work, and thus that Trump would be the wrong man. I think a lot of us, Bruce, felt that way. But then we turned around. And you explained it pretty well here why you feel that he was the only guy, really, that could be right for this job right now.
Yeah, it really had to be Trump. I mean, first of all, yes, I was critical of what was going on with personnel throughout the entire first Trump administration. And I believe that that's what killed him in 2020. I think that, you know, people who worked for him, who didn't believe that they worked for him, took over COVID and made a disaster of that. They made it impossible for him to address the race riots in the summer. And they let the Democrats screw up the election. So, you know, so I think the personnel problems really did doom him. And I'm pleased to see that at least he seems to be doing better on that front. I hope he manages to do it, not just with the headliners, but all the way down.
So for you, what would the priorities
be? What really
be?
Happened? Yeah.
Go ahead. Complete your thought. But my question was going to be then, you know, for you moving forward, what would your priorities be? But close the loop. I'm sorry, Bruce.
Well, look, my priority was changing the structure of government. The whole regulatory state that's developed really over the past 100 years needs to be gutted and restructured. And people forget, by the way, bureaucracy, which we all love to curse out, started as a reform movement. Because before there were professional bureaucrats, jobs were for sale. And, you know, they went to my cousin and the highest bidder instead of a professional class.
Right.
So bureaucracy was meant to reform that. But now we need to reform it. And I wouldn't, by the way, advocate sending it back to the highest bidder or my cousin. but I mean, that had been my highest priority. But that shifted when I saw what was going on, what happened throughout the Biden administration and then really accelerated, you know, during the last year. I mean, the attacks on Trump as the focal point and anyone they associated with Trump were just outrageous. The fact that you had Trump supporters like Steve Bannon doing jail time, the horrible, horrible mistreatment of people who really did nothing worse on January 6th than trespassing. I mean, they should have been given a $25 ticket and told not to do it again.
Well, and I agree. You know, look, that's one of those issues that kind of gets lost because it sounds like you're defending what happened on January 6th. And I've been a critic of that. But you're right about that. The inequitable treatment of some of these folks. Look, we have people who have raped and, you know, assaulted and unfortunately even, you know, took a girl out and she lost her legs here in St. Louis who have less time than some of the January 6th defendants that didn't do a whole lot. I'm fine with throwing the book at the ones that did damage, were violent or whatever. But that's not what they did with all those prosecutions.
No, it's not. And the resources that were spent on that were just way out of proportion to anything. It's inequitable. Quite frankly, the race riots until the summer were much more damaging and they harmed many more people. The difference is there is one way in which January 6th really did stand out, and that is that it personally inconvenienced very important people.
Yeah.
You know, guy who runs a laundromat in Kenosha doesn't matter. Members of Congress matter. So January 6th was personally inconvenienced to many very important people, and that's a mistake. And if you think that that's a basis for differential treatment, as the Biden administration clearly does, then, you know, what went on was just way out of whack. And the demonization of Donald Trump. I mean, we get it. You don't like the guy. He's the other political party. He's supposed to have policies you don't like. The guy who got it right, not surprisingly, was John Fetterman. Okay,
isn't that amazing?
Marco
You're right.
Rubio was named.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio was named as the Secretary of State, and Fetterman says when the other side wins, they're going to appoint people I disagree with. But I know Rubio; he's a good guy, and I look forward to supporting him.
Yeah, Fetterman, okay. Man, talk about a guy that saw the writing on the wall in Pennsylvania. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to be on the ball, and the Democratic Party needs him because it's not just Joe Manchin who retired. Manchin was kind of due to retire, but they lost Kyrsten Sinema, and you know, she was another one who was willing to think for herself. Tulsi Gabbard thought for herself, and she got bounced from the party and put on a terror watch list.
Yeah, that's outrageous. Look, Fetterman, you're right, though. Fetterman's going to play a pretty important role because he seemingly is one of the few left that has some common sense on that side. Bruce, thank you so much for jumping on here in St. Louis. As always, I really appreciate it.
Right.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care. That's Bruce Abramson, who writes about politics all the time, and I find him on Real Clear or Substack. Let me play, you know, Sue, last week we talked about the Joe Rogan stuff, and, you know, I think I even mentioned earlier this hour, somebody said, hey, wouldn't that be great for, oh, yeah, it was one of the people in the New York Times that was quoted, wouldn't it be great for a president every once in a while to go on a Joe Rogan or one of these other shows? And I think that's going to happen because new media has become such an important part of the landscape. But I wanted to play this because I pulled a couple of cuts from Rogan on, you know, the situation with Hollywood. And I've alluded to this as well. My guess is that because I've said I have friends in the world of entertainment, my musical friends, they're lost. Okay. I'm just telling you right now that I'm worried about them. I really am. Their mental stability. I have Hollywood friends, though, that have to always be quiet, right? And this is what Joe Rogan's kind of talking about, because some of them, they get it.
There's a lot of people that don't speak their mind. Do you know how many artists that have reached out to me that are like hippies, man? Like artists, like musicians, comedians that thanked me for endorsing Trump because they can't do it.
Hmm.
They said they want to, but they don't want to be attacked. They can't say it. They think the country is going in the wrong direction. They think that this control of social media by the government, which we would have had pretty much fully if it wasn't for Elon buying Twitter, that this is a dangerous precedent to set, whether it's a right-wing government or a left-wing government.
Absolutely. And then one of the one of the more joyful things that's happened here, kind of pun intended, is that some of our friends who have left the aforementioned X platform that Elon bought, like Joy Reid, she's not going to be there anymore.
Huh. Hey, guys. So today I finally did something I've been meaning to do for a while. The reason for doing it and kissing goodbye my 1.9 million followers over there is because I hadn't been posting for a long time. I just didn't want to contribute content once it was purchased by its present owner. Okay. I was only holding on to it because I, you know, really didn't want someone trying to take over that name.
Okay. She's such an embarrassment. So we won't miss Joy Reid. Don Lemon, I guess he's still a thing, right? Don Lemon says he's gone too.
Hi, everyone. I have loved connecting with all of you on Twitter and then on X for all of these years. But it's time for me to leave the platform. I once believed that it was a place for honest debate and discussion, transparency and free speech.
Mm-hmm.
But I now feel it does not serve that purpose.
Okay. He lost us at transparency and free speech.
Yes.
This is the greatest thing about what's happened in the last 10 days, is the complete, I don't even know how to describe it, because the media types, they just don't get it. They continue to not get it. And I think it's interesting because there's big risks for broadcast media in particular. Look, if they go in, we've talked about this, get rid of these drug company ads. I don't know what they're going to do. You got MSNBC. They are dropping viewers like crazy right now. Now, in fairness, what happens in situations like this, because I don't know if you saw the story, Sue, but Fox News' ratings way up, MSNBC way down. It's not that the MSNBC viewers are flocking to Fox, but more people are interested right now in what's happening on that side of the equation versus the other. I also find, you know, just because this is anecdotal, but I see a lot of my friends on the left who are trying to, you know, get away from media. Like, I've seen people on Facebook, and I'm only dabbling on Facebook a little bit because I took it off my phone, but they're talking about, you know, canceling the New York Times and stuff like that. I'm not sure how that makes any sense. Why would you cancel the New York Times if you're pissed off about the election, right? Don't get it, but these are some of the behaviors that are going on the other side. We got Sue's News in a Thursday edition coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.